Welcome to All the Bits, a fake radio variety show about board games, the community, and all the lovely, lovely bits. Now it's time to dive into the bits with Sean and Michelle. We made it to episode 5, Michelle.
We did! The wood episode.
It's been a while.
It has been a while, but we got con crud and canned crud.
Yes, that's pretty awful, actually.
Yeah, it was pretty awful.
How are you feeling now? I understand you're back to kind of being under the weather.
Yes, I am. I caught my daughter's day home cold. Ouch. It's begun.
Yeah, this is until your body builds up the immune system. You're in trouble.
I know. What about you? Is your Gen Con crud over?
It is, but my throat's still, I'm sure you might be able to tell, my throat's still pretty raspy here.
So we both have sore throats. This is going to be a very nice episode.
Yeah, I hope everyone enjoys it. Maybe I could figure out a way to soften it.
That's a good idea.
We'll figure out a way. So you mentioned a couple seconds ago, what episode is this?
Episode 5, the wood episode, because wood is the, what is it called? Material. For your 5th anniversary.
Yeah. We thought we would do something, a new bit, and by the way, everyone, our segments on our show, they're called bits. You see what we're doing there, Michelle?
Whoa, wait a minute. Our title is All the Bits? And our show is made up of all the bits. Wow. Mind blown.
Did your head just explode?
Totally.
Cool. So, our anniversary bit, well, we thought we would take that opportunity to highlight older games. Because if you look down the different types of, I guess, traditional anniversary, I know there's UK and there's American and there's different places. But the traditional ones, a lot of those gifts are very similar to things that you find in board games.
Yes, they are.
Particularly board games that one of your co-hosts of All the Bits loves more than anything.
Trading in the Mediterranean.
So, if you're thinking about wood, what's a game that highlights wood, Michelle?
This was like an instant, immediate answer, and it was Caverna. Was my choice for wood because it has a ridiculous amount of wood. It's super big, the box. And my copy has the broken token insert, which is made out of wood. So my Caverna is all wood. And also, it has wood as the bit. So,
it's
double whammy.
All about the wood, isn't it?
It's all about the wood. Yeah, good old Caverna. So many bits.
I think what we're hoping to get from this particular bit segment is that we'll tell you in a second, we'll come up with what the next anniversary would be, and we're hoping you'll give us and our listeners a chance to maybe, you know, play a game and mess around with something that isn't necessarily Cult of the New, something that might be a little bit older, might not even be that old, but it just has a piece of whatever our anniversary gift is.
And then at some point we'll run out of anniversaries. I assume it ends at some point, right? Is there like a 200th anniversary? There can't be.
No, but I seem to recall, I feel like I was at pub trivia a while back, and the oldest married couple is like 90, has been married for like 92 years.
Oh my goodness. Really? So,
like 92, something like that. It's like a couple in England, I think. So, you know, if we can last that long with the show, it probably means we're a success.
Oh, for sure. Or we're just really stubborn.
Yeah, and we just go with our 4 listeners and keep going. Fair enough. Either way.
Yeah.
So, the next anniversary gift, there are 2 choices. It could be candy or iron.
Mm-hmm.
I like the idea of going with iron. And go for it.
I was just going to say, it's definitely the easier choice.
Yeah. I mean, candy, mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I have multiple versions of Candyland. We could just do that if you want.
Yeah.
But I really like, you had in our outline, Manhattan Project Energy Empire uses steel as a resource. And that is a game, we've talked about the bits in it, but we haven't really talked much about the actual game.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that would be a great choice as something that we can highlight for our kind of first anniversary edition resource or token or gift.
Cool, sounds good.
All right, so over the next 2 weeks, I think we should shoot. You have that game, right?
I do.
All right, so I think people should shoot for trying to get that to the table at least one time, and maybe we'll have some discussion points about it next time.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, and that'll be fun. I can't wait till we get into some of the more obscure ones. I think the first few are like really whatever, but I'm sure we'll get into some wacky ones.
I'm hoping there's like forums on BoardGameGeek that will help our search, because yeah, I'm sure there will be a few that takes us a while to find.
Totally.
It'll be fun.
Uh-huh. So I have a question for you, Michelle.
Uh-oh. Here we go.
Let's just get right into it. I haven't asked you anything stupid in like almost a month.
I really missed it.
So, however, this question is not going to be as stupid as usual. It's something that I guess, as I'm sure everyone is aware, I just recently came back from Gen Con and it was amazing. And one of the most talked about vendors there was Restoration Games. And they had a big announcement that their next game is Fireball Island.
Yes, which, I heard.
Yeah, which I think that might have been slightly before my time to really be a game that I'm super excited about. But I was wondering if you could choose any one game from your childhood, and you can be as obscure or as ridiculous as you want, to get remade into like a gamer's game that you would go to Board Game Bliss to buy, or Cool Stuff Inc., like a really proper game shop. I'm not talking about Walmart here. To be remade from your childhood, what would it be?
So, I had this game. I have no idea what it was called, but it was like a supermarket, and it had like aisles, and you had to go buy products, and you had like a little cart. Mm-hmm. And I have no idea how you play it. I'm guessing it was a ripoff of the TV. Remember there was like a TV game or whatever? It was like you would like get a cart and you had to run around, and whatever you filled your cart up you got or something.
Oh, Yeah.
It might have been a ripoff of that. But I just loved the idea of like, I don't know, simulating shopping, I guess, and like with a little cart and the little aisles. I don't know. I just remember thinking it was pretty neat. So that's my choice.
If anyone knows the name of that game, feel free to tweet that at us. Where should they tweet it, Michelle?
At All the Bits Pod.
Or email us.
At allthebitspodcast@gmail.com.
It's just smooth and seamless. And if we can figure it out, we can even go, because I think on Restoration Games, you can actually just go to their website and tell them the games you want them to make. So maybe we could start like this underground viral campaign to get this mysterious shopping game.
Cart.
Yeah.
But I think it's still in my mom's basement. My mom keeps everything. So. Oh, really?
You should go searching for it for next time.
I might, yeah. That Sweet. Sounds like a good plan. Okay, I have a question for you too, sir.
All right.
Mine is super dark.
Oh, please.
I think mine was dark last time. Okay.
Yeah, probably.
All right, are you ready?
I'm ready. Bring it.
All right. You know something is about to happen that's going to inhibit your ability to play games for the rest of your life. What's the last game you play?
Dominion.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
That came easily for you.
Yeah, oh yeah. Dominion's my all-time favorite game, so it would be. I would obviously want.
Base Dominion?
Whatever, I don't care. Just give me a deck of Dominion cards and we'll do it.
We should play Dominion. You should school me.
We should. We should play. Yeah, I didn't get. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I've only ever played with noobs. So.
Oh, God. I love Dominion. I'm not that great at Dominion, but I don't care. It's like, I love just doing stuff in it. Like, I'm not the type of person who's going for the kill and going to get all the provinces and trying to win. I want to make a cool deck.
I love that. I like that game as well quite a bit. I was going to say love, but I don't know. I say that I love all games, so no. I'm trying to tone it down.
I legitimately love Dominion. It's probably one of only a few games that I love. So yeah, definitely for me. Would
cool.
be Dominion. It's time to guess the game.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Hey, Michelle, what's this bit all about?
All right, so when I was in labor with my daughter, my husband and I played this game to keep me distracted. And it's guessing the game. So he would just pick something from my collection, give me some clues, and I was trying to figure out which game he was talking about. And I quite enjoyed myself, despite being in labor. So I thought it'd be kind of cool to try it on the podcast, and people can guess with us, or with you, I guess, right, this episode as we go.
All right. Well, I'm assuming everyone will do way better than me. Again,
perhaps.
Feel free to tweet us at
All the Bits Pod.
How long it took you to get it? Because I'm assuming I'm really bad. I have this. It's like over there on my coffee table, and I don't want to get up. Quiznix, something like that. It's a game like this where you give clues and you try and get the person to answer the whatever the answer is. I'm so awful at it.
Yeah, I'm pretty bad at it too, but I enjoy it because it makes me think about games.
Do I get to Google stuff as you're asking me?
No.
Ah, darn it. Okay.
But I'll give you good clues. Like, if you're stuck, don't struggle. Like, we'll get through this.
I've had a really long day and I'm going to be embarrassed.
I'm going to try to start with more obscure clues and then get more concrete ones.
That's how Quiznix. I really should know the name of it. That's how it works.
That's how it works. Okay. Sorry. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. So, the type is a strategy game, and it's in your collection.
In my collection?
Yes. The weight is 3.25. It's 90 to 120 minutes, and it plays 1 to 5 players.
In Terraforming Mars.
Oh, you got it so fast!
Really?
Yeah. That was pretty good.
It was the 1 to 5 player thing, and in my collection.
Okay, I have one more then.
Sweet, because I don't have any.
Yeah. Okay, this is in your collection too, I think. What? I don't think you've sold it yet. Okay. The weight is 1.73.
That sounds about more like it.
Plays in 30 to 60 minutes, and it's 2 to 4.
Okay, no, I got nothing.
Okay. The category is fantasy puzzle.
Fantasy puzzle?
I feel like fantasy is a little misleading. Yeah.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
I'm actually surprisingly good at this.
You're exceptionally good at this. Because it usually takes me way more clues.
I'm doing a giant stretch now to show my success.
Well done.
All right. So maybe next episode I'll try and come up with something for you.
Yeah, sounds good.
That's going to be hilarious. Time for our drive-bys bits. So we're only going to do a couple of drive-bys, I think, today. But I definitely played a lot. But the drive-bys I picked today, I feel like I've played more times in the last, 2 weeks than I've played any games anytime recently. So
that's good.
All right. Here, I'll start with Stop Thief.
Okay.
Which I've been tweeting from our Twitter account, which is
at All the Bits Pod.
I really think it's my favorite game from Gen Con, at least the ones I brought back, and probably the ones I played too there. So Stop Thief is from Restoration Games that we mentioned before. On the BGG site, they have Rob Davio, Robert Doyle, and Justin D. Jacobson as the designers. I'm not quite sure, to be honest, who the original designer is. As we've talked about, Restoration Games are taking games that have previously been done and redoing them for a modern era, if you will. And Stop Thief is a hidden movement game, but what I love about Stop Thief is that it's a hidden movement game where it's not one versus many or one versus all. And that's typically my problem with hidden movement games. I like the theory behind them, that you're all trying to find someone with minimal information, but I don't like that one person has to play against everyone else.
Mm.
And what I love about Stop Thief is there's a fully integrated app with it that controls the criminal. So basically what you have is you're a bunch of investigators who are trying to retire. You're trying to make enough money catching criminals that you can retire.
Nice.
And the criminal, there are four different sections on the board, and the criminal is basically trying to robs or has a heist somewhere and then runs off somewhere else, and you're trying to catch him. And the app is doing is it's giving you clues of where he goes. So it's giving you a sound. So there's sounds for like smashing a window or opening a door or being on the street or walking in or committing another robbery. So you get your clue, and it tells everyone, gives everyone the same information. In your hand, you have a hand of cards that you can play. So you can play, let's say, a seven, and you would move your investigator seven spots on the board. However, some of the cards give you a private clue before or after you move. So what that is, you do it, you play the card, you take the app, and there's a thing that says private clue on the app, so just you get to see that.
Mm.
And when you do that, it tells you exactly where the bad guy or the criminal is, and then you have the option of performing an arrest. When you perform an arrest, if you're successful, you get whatever the bounty is on that particular criminal. They're different criminals, and they have different values, as well as different quote-unquote characteristics. So some might give you more money if they break windows, or some might give you more money if you have more cards in your hand, like that. And if you're unsuccessful, you have to throw $1,000 away.
Huh.
And I think I've played this game 5 times now, so since coming back from Gen Con as well as there. And I love how the phone is controlling it, and everyone has the same information aside from the private tips. It seems like they're also adding new modes to it. So it seems like they're adding a cooperative mode.
Sweet.
They're adding a one versus many mode. I think they're adding a hard mode on it. And I'm just kind of reading here about the original, what they've done to it. So I don't know, have you ever seen the original?
I know about the, like, 80s phone-looking thing.
Yeah, so it's got, like, this big, giant box phone thing. So just looking, they've obviously put an app instead of that, which gives you much more quality to it and allows you to add in new modes of play. Apparently, there was a roll-and-move mechanic in the original. Again, I've never played it. So they kind of took out that as well. They've also, instead of just dice, you now... Every investigator has an asymmetrical deck of cards, so each one kind of has their own thing that they do. Some are better moving outdoors, some are better moving indoors, some are move more, will move longer, some will let you look at clues more. So I really like how what they've done to it, and I'm so looking forward to what they do next with their next few releases.
Yeah, they came out of the gates with a bang.
I was kind of worried of the three Restoration games. This was the one at first, I don't think I will like this. I'm not sure if I'll like this. And really, the only reason I landed up getting it was because they had a deal at Gen Con. If you buy the three of their games, you get them for $80, which was a pretty good deal. And it turns out it's by far my favorite, probably my favorite game that I got at Gen Con and that I've played.
Is it like top 10 for you, do you think?
No. I mean, I don't think I played it enough to be top 10.
Yeah,
you
know, okay.
Again, comparing it to Dominion, which I played well over 100 times. It's
right,
hard to,
yeah, that's...
You know,
yeah.
To do, but it's definitely one that I'm always looking forward to playing. And I almost think, like, you know, the future of kind of... adding content to board games is using like an app, something that you could just using the same stuff you get in the box, you can still just keep adding content and adding different modes of play. Like that's so good. And
that's
so
well, look
awesome.
At the way they did that with Clank, right? Like they added that solo mode after it came out, and they didn't even market it as a game that had a solo mode. It was just like a wonderful surprise one day.
Yes, totally. I remember playing that like the night you came out and being like, oh, this is so cool. So definitely, like, that's such a great way to give your customers more value.
Interesting. I was just to follow up with you. I was not interested in this at all. I don't like hidden movement games. I'm like you. I like the concept, but every time I've played, I had Letters from Whitechapel, and I hated that game. It got me so frustrated. I don't know. I was just so bad at it, but I didn't enjoy the process of the deduction, which is unusual for me because I like deduction games.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're like Stop Thief, I was like, anyways. But now that you've explained it, I'm certainly intrigued.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Like, I'm the same way. I do not like, I would not have gotten this game if it wasn't part of a deal. So I'm really happy that was a thing.
That worked out.
Yeah.
Cool. All
right, what's your first pew, 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 pew?
My pew, pew is The Fox in the Forest.
Oh, yeah.
This is by Joshua Burgell, and it's published by Renegade Game Studios and Foxtrot Games. And it came out, did it come out at Gen Con or a little bit before Gen Con? I think it came out a little bit before, maybe Origins.
Yeah, it definitely came out a bit before Gen Con.
Okay. So this is a two-player trick-taking game, which is awesome. Yeah, two players, trick-taking, right up my alley. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's three suits, cards are numbered 1 to 11, and there's a trump that you flip over, so you deal out almost the whole deck, but there's 7 cards set aside, so it's not perfect information, and you just flip over one of the cards out of the 7, and that gives you a trump suit. I don't think they call it trump, but it's a trump, and it's very standard. You have to follow suit. Highest wins. If you can't follow suit, you can trump. If you obviously trump wins, which sounds, okay, standard doll as a two-player game, but what they did is every odd number, so 1, 3, 5, 7, 9, 11, have special abilities on them. So things like switch up the trump, or if you lead with an 11, they have to follow with the 1 or the highest card, grab another card from the pile of leftover cards, change trump, I think maybe I already mentioned that. If you play a 1... and you lose, you can lead the next trick, which gives you the power. So, like, little twists and turns. Mm-hmm. And then you play a bunch of hands. There's little point tokens, and you're aiming for 21 points. And the other twist in it is that you only want to get a certain number of tricks. So if you win 0 to 3 tricks, you get, like, 6 points at the end of the round. And then as you progressively go up, you get less. So, like, if you get 0 to 3, it's 6. But if you get a 4 tricks, it's 1 point. So, and then the other prime spot is 7 to 9 is 6 points as well. And then past that, you get nothing. And there's 13 tricks to be won. So you're trying to play your hand in such a way that, you're maximizing your points possible. So, yeah, it works really well. It's, most trick-taking games I've ever tried it too, it's like you can tell it's a variant or just not that interesting. But this one really, really works well. It feels like a trick-taker, and it feels like a trick-taker on steroids. Like there's, it's not rote. Like some trick-takers are like, okay, this is the obvious card I should play. This is the obvious card I should play. In my opinion, it has none of that. So, yeah, just great. Fantastic. It's a pretty quick playing time, like probably 20 to 30 minutes. The art's beautiful. And the card backs, I tweeted the card backs because I love a good card back.
You did. Definitely. It definitely looks nice.
Yeah, and it's like it looks like a playing card. Like it's a classic card back that way. So, great. Great game. Yep. Small. And not expensive. And I'm very happy I have it. I'll probably get a lot of plays out of it. It's right up my alley.
I think I'm going to have to pick that up ASAP, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah. I definitely want to grab that.
Yeah, I did not disappoint. What's next up for you?
All right. Well, the next one up for me is a, I guess, trick-taking game, although it's more of like a ladder-climbing game, but Custom Heroes, which is another one of my Gen Con purchases, designed by John D. Clare. And plays 2 to 6 players from AEG. And so this is based on the card crafting system. And so very similar to Mystic Veil, where you're... Mystic Veil is, I guess, is a deck quote-unquote deck builder, you're adding to your base cards and trying to improve them. At its heart, Custom Heroes is just a very basic trick-taking, ladder-climbing type game in that you have cards, I think, 1 to 10, and you shuffle them together. Everyone who's playing gets dealt cards. And then it's just a basic. Your first turn is usually going to be very basic. It's a basic trick-taking game like that. And the thing about this game is it doesn't matter that you're taking tricks. The only reason you want to take a trick is so you get better position for the next hand. So for your next round. So if I take a trick, let's say, with my seven, a single seven, I get to start first. And so this is it's similar to like Linko in that whatever you play, so if I play a single, like 1-3, the next person can only play a 3 or higher. They can't play 2-4s or whatever. If I play 3-5s, the next person has to play 3-5s or higher. So it's got to be the same set or same pair or however many one person plays. You can't play, if I play 3-3s, the next person can't play a 7. They have to play 3 of a kind. But then where the trick taking comes, where the card crafting comes in, is that so everyone has kind of this wacky anime player screen. And you start the game with two enhancements in it. The enhancements are the clear plastic things that you put in the card. And everyone starts with an ascended form, which basically is a trump. It just says that this card beats all other cards. And with a betting card that you can bet that you're going to win a particular hand. The first hand is very smooth. Nothing will particularly happen. But after the first hand, whoever comes in first will get, I think, 4 or 5 victory points, depending on who's playing. And then as you work your way down, so whoever comes in second will get, I think, 1 enhancement. Whoever comes in third will get 2. Whoever comes in last might get 3 or 4 enhancements.
Okay.
And they'll put those behind their screen, so no one will know. And then you go on to the next hand, and here's where things start to get interesting, because the enhancements are anything from, like, giving your card +4, +3, +4, +5, to making it so one card counts as a double, or one card counts as a wild in a set, or I'm trying to think some of the other funkier ones. I love, there's ones that if you play it, it reverses the numerical direction. So if we're going, if we're going up, so if we're going, you know, whoever gets higher, and a 6 was played, and I play my 7 with that enhancement, then we go down towards 1. So there's all sorts of things like that that mess things up. There are some of them you do have to pay quote-unquote power for. So like the ascended form, I think, is like 2 power. And depending how good you're doing, you might not have power at any given time. So then you play, and then once that hand is done, let's say the next hand is done, all the cards are shuffled together, so you don't get your cards back. So you might have, you know, you might have pushed all in and gone crazy with your enhancements, but the next round you might not get any of those cards back.
Very cool.
So you're gambling a little bit like that, but then it just adds. Once you get into like round 3 or 4, like all the cards are like super powerful and they do weird and wacky things.
Oh my god. This sounds amazing.
It's really fun. It's like, and it's not, I mean, it can take a little bit, so the way to win is, this is the only thing I'm not entirely sure how much I like about the game. Like, I love the gameplay, I love how it works, is that you have to win, it's the first person to get 10 or more points, but you have to, once you have 10 points, you have to win the next hand, or you get busted down to 9 points. So even if I have 15 points and I don't win that hand that will cause me to win the game, I go down to 9 points. So I'm not...
Yeah.
So it doesn't take away from how much I love this game. I think I've... On my BGG thing, it says I played it 4 times, so I think I've played it like 7, because I'm not very good at ranking my games. It doesn't take away from how much I like the game, but it can make it... It can draw it out a little bit.
Okay.
One of the groups I was playing with, we just figured out that if you do that betting card, that kind of lets you mitigate this a little bit, in that you could, if you have 9 points and you bet that you're going to win the hand, like, I think it's just 2, you get 2 victory points if you win, 2 extra victory points, and the rule book says that that happens before you get before you check to see if you were over 10 points. So that causes you to win. So there was a couple of games where everyone was just betting. Like once everyone reached like 8 or 9, we all just bet on that final one, and then that kind of ends the game. Whoever wins that end. So that's the only thing about the game that I'm not entirely sure about right now. But I do. I'm a huge fan of it.
Yeah, I wish the theme was different, hey? Well, for me, anyways.
Yeah, but honestly, the theme is, it's like Mystic Veil. It's like, there's not much theme. Like, it's, yes.
No, I know there's no theme, but, like, I'm not, I'm not drawn to the art or the game at all. But that's just my personal taste.
However, they do attack each other with things like mustard and ketchup and hot dogs, so. That's some of the enhancements are just, like, plus one, he gets a foam number one finger, and then other, there's one with a hot dog, and I don't know, it's weird.
Okay, well, that's kind of fun, I guess.
I can hear you. It's like, it could definitely, someone who I played with last week commented about, like, the player screens, that they didn't like the player screens on it, because it's got that heavily anime influence on it. Can be, frankly, distracting a little bit, so.
But, okay.
Yeah. All right, what's your next? Pew, 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 pew!
Pew, pew! I had to do this one because it was my number one on Gen Con anticipated list when we did our shenanigans.
Shenanigans?
Yeah. Shenanigans! To be fair, if I went back, I would probably completely change my list. But this was number one at the time, so. Mm-hmm. And it's number 9. Not to be confused with my number one.
Yes, I remember when you did that all those weeks ago.
Yeah. A wee bit confusing.
Yeah.
So it's NMBR9. So this one is designed by Peter Wichman, published by Abacus Feel, and just coming to North America with by Z-Man Games. And I explained it very poorly last episode, and I will attempt to do the same this episode.
Now that you've actually played it.
Yeah, well, at least now I've played it. That's great. So this is a very simple, light tile-laying game. And what you have is a deck of cards with numbers 1 to 9 in it twice. And then you have enough tiles for players to play every number twice. And the way these tiles look is picture a number, and then it's that shape, but square. So it's kind of like has a pixelated look to it. And what you do is you turn over a card, and it'll say 6, and everybody takes a 6, and then they place it. And you're allowed to stack tiles on top of tiles as long as they don't hang over the edge or cover up a space, a gap. Oh, and they have to be over 2 or more numbers. So you can't, like, put a 9 on top of a 9 and be like, ta-da, look what I can do. It's cheating. Even though everyone I've played with has done that at least once in the game. So, and that's it. And then you play through the whole deck, and it takes, like, 15, 20 minutes. And then you score. And the way scoring works is every tile on the first level is worth nothing. Then every tile on the second level is worth their value. Then every tile on the third level is worth their value times 2, etc., and so on. And, I really was looking forward to it because I thought it would be an easy puzzle. Very colorful, very bright, and I was not disappointed. It was very good. I don't know how many plays I have of it now, but I'm probably reaching 6 or 7 now. And it's a really good puzzle. It's, it's different enough every time because the cards come out differently, right? And the shapes are so different that, you know, I mean, it doesn't have a ton of replayability, but it's, you know, it feels unique every time at least. And I've played it with gamers, and I've played it with my mom, and it's like you pull it out, you stick it on the table, the insert has everything ready to go. And, it's just a really, really interesting puzzle for, 20 minutes. Like, don't get me wrong, it's not, this complex, interesting, mind-blowing game, but for a light 20-minute filler, it's got a lot going for it. It's beautiful. Like, when you're done, it looks pretty cool, too, to have this, like, weird pile I like mm-hmm. to do the suburban strategy where I just spread out. It's awful. You're not supposed to spread out, but I always end up spreading out. I'm not very good at it. It's tough. It's tough to play, actually. It's pretty difficult to get up to, like, the third and the fourth level.
Yeah, this looks like the type of game that would absolutely kick my butt.
It does. It kicks butts.
Is it so? One of the things that I'm just looking at the pictures again now, and I remember kind of striking my interest is that it looks like it has a relatively small footprint.
It doesn't.
It doesn't. Oh, so
no!
These pictures are definitely misleading.
Well, the game itself has a small footprint when you have it out on the table.
Mm-hmm.
But the box itself is like probably Isle of Skye size, and for a 20-minute filler, it's like, but, so that, really, honestly, that's the only negative I have to say about it, and replayability, but I mean, you know, it's a 20-minute filler, so.
Yeah.
I guess it makes up for it, like, the insert is brilliant, because you can just, like I said, you open up the box and it's set up. You know, and that's really why the box is as big as it is.
That's true.
Like you could fit it in a Ziploc baggie and call it a day if you really wanted to. yeah.
But that is a pretty sweet insert.
It is. It's a beautiful game. It's just gorgeous.
No, they're not in the shapes of numbers, are they? They're close.
They are. They are in the shapes of the number, but again, that's what I was trying to describe. It's like pixelated, right? Yeah. They're kind of like squares. So it's like a more grid-like numbers. Yeah.
Cool. Neat.
Yeah, it's beautiful. My voice didn't crack for the first time.
No, that's actually pretty good considering you're sick.
Maybe that's the trick.
Yeah. Okay. So then, well, no, don't be sick because I want to do our next one. We're remotely again because Michelle's gross right now. So, but hopefully next time we can actually do it in person since we're finally in the same city.
That would be nice.
So that sound you heard about 15 seconds ago was our introduction to our BGG Thread Spotlight bit.
Oh, that's right.
And this one was sent to us by our loyal listener, Darren, who... I see participated in the discussion as well.
He did.
So thank you, Darren. And this thread, which I will have in the show notes, is called Shelving Your Games, or Shelving Games, How Do You Organize Them? Which I think is a hot button issue for many a gamer, Michelle.
I was a little surprised. I was like, okay. And then I started reading through it and I was like, oh, I didn't even think of these possibilities. I was very surprised by just how many ways people shelve their games.
let's save our thoughts till the end.
Okay,
I'm curious to see if anyone uses my system.
Okay, sounds good. Do you want to jump into some of the comments?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'll just summarize here. So Walt Mulder sorts by publisher, then alphabetical in their own section.
Nice, thorough. Sean Harriman says, I stored my games horizontally by size and frequency of play. I do like that, actually. I haven't heard people doing that before. The frequency
of play. I haven't either. Yeah, it was a surprise for me. Okay, Raya Lynn says, mostly on their sides by size. I try to keep related games like expansions and game series together. And I keep my smaller card games on their sides.
Nice. Yep. Pete says he's doing a major reorganization now, but when he's done, he wants the games to be sorted by the maximum number of players, the preferred max when I disagree with the printed maximum.
Yeah.
Nice. Way to stick it to the man, Pete.
There should be a minimum, too. Like, no, this does not play two, despite what the box says.
So you mean 80% of games?
Oh, seriously. Okay, Lee Benson says he has two sections, one for two-player games and then one for three-plus players. Within each, they're organized by weight, as voted by BGG users. I thought that was really thorough.
Yeah, that's pretty thorough. All right, this next one is from Darren Bazant, who sent us this thread. And he says I sort them loosely by letter, but I sort the smaller card games on their own shelf.
That is a fact.
Yes, it is. I'm assuming we've both seen that.
Yes, yes.
All right.
All right. Kevin Whitmore has his gaming tables next to the game shelves, and he shelves the longer games separate from the games that comfortably fit into an evening. He dedicates one shelf to 6-plus player, another to 5-plus, and then the 3-to-4 player games in their own shelf. That allows players to find the game suitable for the number of players wishing to play.
Kevin Whitmore pretty much sounds like he runs a board game cafe.
Yeah, that's pretty smart.
That's how I've seen it done in some board game cafes. That's awesome if you can do that. Wow. All right. Pam and Tim Kelsey says they sort by size, then publisher, then by color, which helps us identify accidental doubles. Yeah?
I'd love to know how many games they have, if that's the case.
If you have to worry about doubles.
Yeah. Okay, Joe H. says, generally, I organize by what I consider to be primary game mechanism. So, work placement, area control, etc. With some notable exceptions. And he goes on, but I didn't put them all in here. So, if you're interested, check out the thread and the link that we provide. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so by mechanism. Also, that was another surprise for me.
Yes. I am insanely jealous right now of all these people.
Yeah. Well, yeah, according to your wife, they're in the kitchen and in the office and
living room. Yep.
Yeah.
Wherever there's space. All right. Jeff Collins says, kind of how we do Legos around here. And Jeff Collins is my man because this is how I do it.
Nice. Yeah, I liked that one. I had a good giggle. And this one I really liked as well. Alan says, haphazardly.
Yep. Also how it's done. So, yeah, I pretty much treat mine like Lego / Tetris pieces. And I'm just trying to put stuff in where I can maximize space. I would really like to have it done by some system, but I just can't. And then I just have all my like small box games are in like a couple of square IKEA fold-out bins, and I just kind of dump them in there because that's how I get the most bang for my space buck.
Yeah, I'm similar. I think I'm a little bit more organized than you, but I'm all about getting as much out of my shelf as possible because I always want more games and never have enough space. But I do try to do them by box size so that the line along the top of the shelf is nice and clean. And I do keep publishers together within that box size. And then my small games, I just recently actually put in photo boxes. So they like pull out as drawers because I needed more space, which I'm not a huge fan of because you can't, like when you're looking at your shelf and thinking, okay, what game do I want to play? You don't really see them. But I thought, well, you know, if you're in the mood for a card, like usually you're in the mood for that type of game, like a small card game or a filler or whatever. So in that case, you would just like look through the drawers. So we'll see how that works out.
You know what I really want to do? I saw it on Twitter. I think it was Bebo, or I might be wrong, but someone had, you know, those things where you put your shoes in, you hang on the back of a door.
Yeah.
They sell them at like IKEA and stuff, and you put your shoes in there. And we have one of those for my daughter's toys that we dump like a lot of her toys in there, but to put your like small box card game.
Yeah, that sounds messy to me, but...
No, I would love it. I think it'd be cool, but I don't think I can make it fly with the cat, because she likes going into the room where the games are stored, and always messing things up as it is, so I don't know if that would fly right now.
Fair enough.
Hey, you know what I haven't heard for a while, Michelle? A certain song.
Bits, 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 bits.
Welcome to the All the Bits segment.
All the Bits.
All of them. Not
all.
Not just like a few of them, but all of them.
That is correct.
We've talked about the bits in this game a little bit. This was, I think it was both of our number 3 game for Gen Con. My choice for All the Bits this week is Ex Libris by Renegade from Renegade Games by Adam P. McIver. And I did get a chance to actually touch and feel and play the bits of this game, which was
nice.
Awesome.
I'm jealous.
Yes. The only problem was it like 4:30 in the morning or 5 in the morning? So, you know, I don't know how much I retained, but I definitely had a chance to interact with the bits. And honestly, my favorite thing about the bits of this game is instead of giving you, I don't think I knew this when we looked into it for our Gen Con preview show, instead of giving you a score pad, they give you this really fancy looking dry erase board. And it's fairly large. It's about the size of the box.
Nice.
With some markers, and that's what you use to score your points on. And I freaking love that. Like, that's so much better for the environment and maintaining, you know, saving those trees and stuff. So I really like that. And it really looks like an old-timey book thing on it. And we talked about in our preview the really cool meeples that they have for your assistants. So there's a whole variety of them, and there's like a snake and a wizard and your gnomes. Your little, it's a worker placement game, so your little workers are in like gnome shape, which is really neat. The player boards, the player boards where you place your workers on throughout the game are fairly chunky and sizable. They feel really good in your hand, which is really nice.
Yeah.
They seem really high quality. And just the art for everything in this game is awesome. Is absolutely fantastic. If you haven't seen it, like, I would go have a look. It adds so much to the game. The art and the way the books are laid out when you're building your tableau. Like, the books are all different colors. They all have really super humorous names, too. And they're all, like, some are tipped over, some are straight, some are smaller, bigger. So it really
very
does
nice.
Make it look like a really nice, big, colorful bookshelf, too. So it's definitely, yeah, I really wish
you should have. I agree.
Like, the one game that I didn't get that I really
I cannot find a picture of the dry erase board.
I'm very upset that I didn't get it.
So sad. I like to laminate everything. I love dry erase.
Let's see. Let me, sorry, I have it open here.
I'm looking at the images now, and I don't see it.
Yeah, it's really thick, too. Let's see. Is it on here?
No.
Yeah. No, it doesn't seem to be on here, hey? I might have a
please.
Picture. If I do have a picture, I'll post it. Or maybe someone can post it on Twitter for us.
My all the bits is Escape Room the Game. So I picked this up because I had an exit lying around and my mom was over and we played it and she loved it. And so I went to buy the next one and it was sold out everywhere and all I could find was Escape Room the Game. And we've been playing that, and we're totally hooked. It's a ton of fun. But the bits are amazing. So this game comes with, they call it the decryptor or the decoder. Decoder. And it's like this actual box with codes on the sides of it that you use to figure out puzzles. And then it has... comes with like 16 keys, I think, and each of the keys has different like numbers or dots or whatever. So as you're going and playing the game, you come up with four key codes, and you put them into the decoder, and it'll like or ding at you, which is really fun when you're racing against the clock trying to escape a room. And it actually has a timer on the decoder, so you start when you start the game, you hit the start button, and it has 60 minutes, and it counts down as you go. If you get a code wrong, it'll actually ding you, and you lose a minute. And then each of the escape rooms comes with a certain number of hint cards, and you're allowed to reveal each of the hints at certain times. So at like 55 minutes, you could reveal the first hint card. It'll like ding at you, and then you can look at the hint. So, it's really good. It's a really great bit. At first, I was like, okay, that seems a little overdone, but it's so much fun. Like, it just makes the experience feel so much more real, right? Because you've got this countdown, and, you know, and then sometimes you look at it, and you find a code, and then, like, putting the key in, like, the last room we had, I think, like, 40 seconds left, you know? And so, it was like, this was it. It was all or nothing, and just putting... like actually sliding something into something to see if you got the right code was a lot more engaging and fulfilling than doing something on an app, for example. Like, is it when you were talking earlier about, you know, how great it was to have an app and how you can always update the content? I totally agree. But then I thought about this and I was like, I don't know. There's just something so great about having a physical component like this that, it just, yeah, enhances the experience. And yeah, anyway, it's pretty great. Okay, we are going to try a new segment called Unboxing Bits, and it will not happen every episode, maybe every few. Basically, what we're going to do is one of us, if we get a box of games, we will unbox the box and tell you why we got it or what we're looking forward to, what our expectations are, that sort of thing. Sean has a love for unboxing videos, and I have recently gotten on board with the Tom's boring unboxing videos that he does for the Dice Tower Network. So hopefully you guys enjoy this. Let us know. And here we go. I got a box today. It's very not Cult of the New. Well, there's a few new ones in there, but I'm still pretty excited about them all. So we'll start. I'll start with the smallest ones and then go to the biggest ones. So I got three pack of games. I got Shh, Bus, and Gem. And these are from the first set. I am not really one for micro games. I've always just felt that they just lack substance. But I was at a local cafe and they had them for sale. So I'd bought one to support them and just to kind of see out of curiosity. And now I'm completely and utterly hooked. I have, I think, 9 of them at this point. I don't know that I'll get them all, because some of them just don't look that interesting. But, yeah, I'm super stoked about them. And my daughter, who is a year old, loves to play with these as well. She always takes them out of my purse at restaurants and when we're shopping and plays with them. So, anyways, I've got 3 more, and I'm really hoping that one day I can find the Kickstarter exclusives, because one of them is a trick-taking game for 2, which is totally up my alley. And it's called Woo. But anyways, speaking of 2-player trick-taking games, I also received The Fox in the Forest by Joshua Burgle and Renegade Game Studios. Oh, I should probably backtrack too. Those pack of games are by Perplexed as the publisher and Chris Handy is the designer. So The Fox in the Forest is a 2-player trick-taking game, which, if you know me, I play a lot of 2-player games, and I really love trick-taking games and card games in general. So I knew about this one for a while, and yeah, I pre-ordered it right away. I don't know a ton about it. What I understand is it's fairly straightforward trick-taking, but you want to only win a certain amount of tricks. So if you win too few or too many, you'll get less points. So there's kind of that perfect spot. So, you know, 10 tricks and then gets you 6 points, for example. 11 tricks will get you 2. That sort of thing. And it looks pretty standard with suits and numbers, but there are, of course, special ability cards that change things up. So, anyways, looking forward to that one. It's really pretty as well. Let's see what we have next. Yes, Time Stories, the Lumen Fide, 1419. So, I'm kind of growing cold on Time Stories, to be honest with you, but I play them with my husband Rich, as well as a good friend of mine Holly, and it's kind of a tradition, and I'm not sure I'm ready to not do it. So I asked Rich, hey, do you want to keep playing? He said absolutely. So I got the next one. I tried to keep my Time Story scenarios a bit of a surprise, so I don't really watch a lot of reviews or listen to anything. I've heard mixed reviews. Seems like the little bit that I have heard, people either really love it or really hate it, but I've heard it introduces some new mechanisms. So, anyways, looking forward to it, as always. We'll see. Next up is Caverna Cave versus Cave. So, this is a 2-player version of Caverna by Uwe Rosenberg and published by Mayfair Games. I love Caverna, and I love Uwe Rosenberg, so this was a no-brainer. I've played Agricola, All Creatures Big and Small. I actually just acquired that one, and I've been enjoying it, and so I thought I'd get this one as well. I not sure if I'll love it, but I think I just like the idea of having an interesting game with a small footprint that can travel well. Even though I don't travel a lot, I still like the idea of it. And, you know, I like having two-player games that are in, kind of in that line and that size of box. If it looks like a decent game, I usually end up getting it. So looking forward to that one. Hopefully they come out with as many expansions as they did for Agricola All Creatures Big and Small, because I've heard it lacks a little bit of variability. Apparently all the rooms come out just in different orders and things like that. The one thing that really bothers me, actually, is so instead of getting resources, you have a track to track your resources. And so, you know, like if you have one flax, your flax token is on one. So I'm looking at this cut picture and there's six resources, but two of them are cardboard chits and four of them are represented by wooden bits. And that just bugs me. I don't know why they didn't try to make it consistent. These are the little things that bother me. This is why I have a podcast called All the Bits. Okay, next up is Saint Malo. This one, honestly, I bought it for the free shipping just to boost it up, but I've had my eye on this game for at least 2 years, I would say, and I've been just watching and waiting for someone to sell a copy for cheap or for it to go on sale, and I haven't found it, and I thought, you know what, I'm just going to bite the bullet and get it. It's a roll and write dice game, obviously rolling, and the cool thing is you get a draw, which I know that's not that interesting, but it is to me, on a grid and you're building up a city. I don't actually know a ton about it. I just have always heard really good things for people who are fans of Roll and Write, and I happen to be. And heard good things. Sean really likes this one, I know. And it's totally up my alley. So I'm glad I finally picked up a copy. And last but certainly not least is Isle of Sky from Chieftain to King, another game that's been out for a few years. Oh, geez, some of these I'm saying the publisher and designer and some I'm not. My apologies. So Saint Malo is Inca and Marcus Brand by Ravensburger, and this Isle of Sky is Alexander Pfister and Andreas Pelikan, and it's published by Mayfair. So this game I played a few years ago when it first came out, when it was really hot. I played it at the Fall Con, a local convention here in Calgary. With five players, I think I've talked about this on the podcast already, and I didn't really enjoy the experience. I just felt like it was just too much. You know, you had to pay attention to a lot of different tiles and consider what everybody was doing in their tableau, and I just, for what it was, it just felt like too much. But I've recently had a few more plays of it at smaller player accounts and fallen in love with it. It's a really cute little game. I haven't tried it at two. I'm really hoping it's okay at two. That was one of my other hesitations for purchasing it, but it looks like BGG says it's okay at two. So we shall see. And I'm also, another reason I kind of got the extra push to receive or to buy this game was because there is an expansion coming out at Essen, I believe, which I talked about at the Gen Con episode. So you can listen to that. But it's called Journeyman, and it adds a little bit of content and what looks to make it more complex, which I'm interested in. So that's my haul. Again, only a little bit of Cult of the New, but some classics that I'm happy to own. And I hope you guys enjoyed this. Let us know via Twitter at allthebitspod or via email at allthebitspodcast@gmail.com. Hot topic. Like Hot Pocket.
I'm not sure. So we thought our hot topic today would be not really a hot topic, more of a discussion slash argument slash me telling Michelle how wrong she is. Because I just got back from Gen Con and I thought it was great and terrific and definitely worth the hype. However, Michelle is more into the dry, soulless variant of board games, which means Essen is really her thing.
Yeah, and the better one.
So exactly. I'm doing big quotation marks right now. It's really funny though. Something a topic of conversation that came up on multiple occasions at Gen Con was when I was involved a few times with various Europeans, like playing games with people from Europe, and from people specifically who had gone to Essen, who had never been to Gen Con before. And their impression of all of them, without fail, so there's at least a handful, was how much more they liked Gen Con than Essen, and how much better of an experience it was. Whereas all the kind of not North American people who weren't European slash had been to Essen were all very much, I can't wait to go to Essen. It looks so much better than Gen Con. So I found that dichotomy quite interesting, especially both sides really dug their heels in about it. I just found that really interesting.
What kind of reasons did they give?
And again, this is something I've heard. There were a couple, Chad with a couple of very nice Dutch individuals, I think, or one Dutch, one German man. And they had both said one of the things, I think at Essen you get more of, it's less demo. You almost get to play most of the game or
yes, game. I've heard that.
Right? Mm-hmm. And they were saying how much more they prefer to be able to just do a demo and just see what the game is and be able to move on as opposed to having. And I think, again, I'm going to guess it's the mentality, is that if you're kind of stuck in the game there that you don't necessarily like, you're probably going to sit through because it's the polite thing to do as opposed to just getting up and going, which I could see is more of a, North American thing.
And when there's so much hotness around you, it's like waste of time.
And another thing one of them mentioned in particular was with Gen Con, there's so much to do that you never have to look twice before you can find a game to jump into or an activity or an event. And there's tons of things to do to get away from just doing games, which can be exhausting. And there's all sorts, the RPGs and everything else to go with it. Whereas at Essen, you're mostly just, you're kind of in that vendor hall and you're mostly walking around and just doing games. And then you're going back to your hotel and playing games, which doesn't sound like a bad thing. But I understand the point of view that it's nice to have something with a little variety in it too, that you can do something different where you're not kind of pigeonholed into that one thing.
Yeah, for sure. And I've heard Essen just like shuts down. Like if the vendor hall closes at 5, that's it. Like everybody just goes home. And of course there are people like playing games and stuff, but apparently it's harder to find opportunities to play and whatnot. Like it's just dead. Suddenly it's just dead. Everyone's done. Gone.
Yeah, well, it's not particularly, I've never been there. It doesn't seem like a huge, of all these amazing places to go in Germany, which is, I don't know if I've ever told you this, pretty much my favorite country in the world to visit. There's so many amazing places there. Essen doesn't exactly strike me as that, as one of those places from what I've seen slash heard. But, from kind of watching people's reviews and stuff, it seems like you can definitely get into like a lot of games in your hotels and stuff, especially if you organize. And I know on BGG, they do a pre-Essen thing where people organize all their games and their game nights. So that's you would obviously love to go to Essen, I take it, Michelle?
Yeah, and really, like, for me, I don't know, like, in terms of experience, which one I'd prefer. I mean, they both sound interesting in different ways, but for me, it's all about the games. And, when I read the Gen Con list, I was like, okay, yeah, that sounds neat, that sounds this. Neat, but when I read the Essen list, I was like, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god, like just like so excited. So I think, just that in and of itself would probably give me a better experience because I would just be so excited and I would enjoy the games that I was seeing so much more. And everything I saw would be exciting versus Gen Con, where I would probably pass up a lot. Just because, and I'm sure there would be a lot that would interest me, don't get me wrong, because I know it's huge, but like the just pure excitement, like I feel when that Essen list came out, it was like Christmas morning. I was so excited, like let's sit down, grab a coffee, go through the list, and it was just, there were so many moments where I was just like, yes, oh, I can't wait. So for me, it's all just about the games, like regardless of the experience. And yeah, it's just the game itself.
And I think it makes sense to you, since you're, I mean, I make fun of you about your taste in games, but you're into more of that Euro type of game, right? The type of game that is what Essen is all about.
Mm-hmm.
Versus, I guess, myself, where I'm not so, I do enjoy those games, but it's not, I'm, you know, I'm maybe a little bit more into like a storytelling game or, you know, card games or, you know, trick-taking games, things like that. So Gen Con usually at least tends to have a nicer mix of that. And you had mentioned before that list, just to let people know, that's the BGG. I'm guessing you're talking about the BGG convention tool, which is so amazing. Like, even if you're not going to the convention, still use it. Like, that was the biggest lifesaver for me for Gen Con.
But it's brilliant.
I'm totally going to use it for all the things. It's such a great way to catalog your information and kind of keep stuff, because I found the old lists were just really frustrating.
Well, and this list actually has, like the new interface, which, you know, some of BGG resides in. And I love the new interface. It's very nice. And the old one is very not nice. Oh, it's terrible. So, yeah, it's nice for that, because, you know, you feel like you're in 2017 and not in 1993 when you're browsing. Yeah.
Well, speaking of Essen, I still do have a hotel booked. If,
I know.
You
know,
if you decide you want to go, I'm going to have to cancel it soon.
I don't know. Like, I don't know if I would go. I mean, I think I'd have to be there already or have to make a bigger trip out of it.
Oh,
because
yeah.
The thing is I feel like I would just go. It would be expensive to go, and I would just go there and spend money. A lot of money. And then come back.
And then ship it home.
Sorry?
And then ship it home.
Exactly.
Because.
Like, I'd have to make a bigger trip out of it.
Oh, yeah. I definitely think. Originally my wife and I were kind of thinking about that we would potentially do this and then do, like, a two-week vacation and kind of finish it off or start in Essen, and then I could do that and then, you know, go throughout Germany, because, like I said, Germany's an amazing place, and Europe is just so easy to get around regardless. So It's definitely something you want to do as part of a vacation. I can't imagine, unless you absolutely have to be there for work or for a job, that you would do that. Because just dealing with all the jet lag, especially from us in Calgary, Canada, it's a 10 or 11 hour flight.
Yeah, it's pretty.
Take us to get there?
Yeah.
So you're already dealing with, if you're, let's say, going a day or two before, you're going to be jet-lagged for the first couple of days there. And then, you know, you're going to be completely messed up once you get home.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
It's going to be harder to enjoy all those lovely, lovely Essen releases.
All the beautiful bits. Yeah. So it is on my bucket list, though, to go. If you could go again, which would you want to go to? If you could go to a convention again, you would go back to Gen Con, or do you think you would want to try Essen?
Oh, definitely Essen.
Yeah.
And like I said, the problem with Essen is, whereas Gen Con I was able to do in 4 days, like it was a 4 day thing, and then I'm back home and it's a 2 hour time difference. Essen has to be, and it just gets hard to do, right? Like with work and everything, it's got to be almost 2 weeks, a 2 week block that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, Essen's also, for the most part, not a very good time of the year for me too.
October.
So, I think, though, once all the bits get super big, and then we'll have to go to Essen.
We'll have to. It just won't be a choice anymore.
We have to do it for our listeners.
That's right. Because we're dedicated.
Exactly.
Fake radio hosts.
Awesome. Yes, thank you. Oh, I totally haven't.
Oh.
I'm just not on the ball today.
We should update our resumes. Fake radio host. Co-host.
Yeah, fake radio co-host. Totally. And next up, batter.
Oh dear!
Oh my! All right, time for the next up bit.
Yeah,
so this is some things that we're looking forward to, and I'm going to be digging way back into the well for this one. But if you've been listening to the show, you know what it's going to be for one of them. I guess I'll start with that one. Might as well start with Pandemic Legacy. Season 1.
Oh, dear.
So I am in April, and our friends Peter and Liz, who I think are listeners of the show. Hi, guys, if you are, if one of you is listening to this, are coming over tomorrow so we can jump back into that.
Yes.
Try and finish it off. So I have been looking forward to it. I can't remember if it was one of our beta episodes or on-air episodes last time I talked about Pandemic Legacy, but how upset I was before my summer pilgrimage that I was not going to be able to play it again for 2 months.
Yeah, I don't remember which one it was.
So I'm totally looking forward to seeing where the story goes. There was so much buzz and things about season two at Gen Con. They had these like ridiculous booths, and you could go in and play with like Rob Davio and in these sectioned off areas, which was really neat. So there's so much. It was so hard not to go anywhere near there because I didn't want to even get the smallest spoiler about it, even though I was spoiled a few months ago. But thank God I have a horrible memory and I've totally forgotten.
This is why these like one hit games don't bother me, because I can go back 6 months later and be like, nope, don't remember how this ends.
All right, what's your next what's your leadoff hitter?
I'm not sure what that means.
What is your first?
My first baser.
What's your first baser, Michelle?
My first baser is Carney's The Bloody Inn expansion. So,
please tell me it's about Carney's going to the Bloody Inn and getting killed.
I believe it is. I need to pull it up. I know. So I love the Bloody Inn. It's a card game that came out at Essen, I'm going to say 2 years ago. And I play it a lot. I'm mostly solo. It's just fabulous. I love it. And I love the art. So this Carney's, so the Carney's are a new type of guest. And before the police investigation step, if a Carney occupies a room, you have to resolve an event card that round. So that's the one module. And then there's another module where there's just the notables, which are a type of guest that replaces the nobles. And then the last one is an aunt. Jeanette is a grumpy old aunt. Yeah, she's grumpy, who manages the neutral rooms. And I don't know, it just says they'll cost you. So I'm not sure what she does. But yeah, so it comes out at Essen, and I cannot wait. This is an absolute must-buy for me. It's 52 new cards.
Nice.
Very excited. Yeah,
I've only played your version of Bloody Inn. Like, I don't own it, but it's a fun game. It's like, I feel like Bloody Inn's like one of those games I just want to play around Halloween just to keep it going.
That's a good call.
It's a fun game. I really enjoyed it. I think you lent it to me last year, and I probably played it like 4 or 5 times during that
period.
So, yeah, definitely. And anything with Carney's is, this is such a good segue, Michelle.
It is!
My next game I want to talk about is Meeple Circus from Madagot Games, designed by Cedric Millet. And the art is really cool in this game, so I am going to mention the artist, Sabrina Tobal. And I believe it's coming out in November. I'm going to guess. Is it coming out? I'm not sure if it's coming out of Essen, but it's around that time it's supposed to come out.
Okay.
So this was another game I had the opportunity to play at Gen Con. And basically what this is, you're in a circus and you're trying to entertain your audience. And it's a stacking game, but it's got lots of really cool bits in it. And the bits are like, they're strongmen and they're horses and camels and donkeys, barbells.
An elephant.
Elephants, yes, totally.
So cute.
And what you have to do is, it's a dexterity game, so not unlike Junk Art. However, it definitely has a lot more theme than Junk Art, because one, there is a soundtrack that goes with it that's really cheesy circus music. So yay.
But for the win! You also
have to decide, as you're playing, you have to pick cards and determine what pieces you want to take, and then what structures or, I don't know what you would call them. I guess structures you build with your circus folk and your circus people. And you're going to get points based on that. It's definitely pure dexterity. I'm not very good at it, but it was just, I don't know if it was just the soundtrack that did it for me. But, I mean, and honestly, like, this was one of those games that you could stand by and see how much everyone was absolutely loving it. Like, when I was waiting to do the demo, there was, like, probably a crowd of, like, 8 or 10 people around us, and they were all, like, laughing and seemed to be enjoying it, and the people who were playing it was enjoying it, and then when I sat down for the demo, it was the same thing. People were all crowding around it, and it was definitely has that curb appeal, that when you see it, you're like, you want to play it.
Okay.
Having not, I don't own it or anything, obviously, since it's not out yet. I don't own junk art. I don't know how much you might need both. It'll be interesting to see once it gets out and people start playing it. But I'm definitely looking forward to actually playing a full game, even though I absolutely suck at these types of games.
Yeah, I've heard, I really have no interest. I do own junk art, though. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those games where people I wouldn't gamers I wouldn't normally think that would enjoy this type of game are like, oh, it's fantastic. Well, so I'm my curiosity is just intrigued because, yeah, it's kind of surprised me who's liked it and how much.
Yeah, it's one of those games that the theme just sticks out. And I think because of the art, I think for me, the art and, you know, again, I don't know how much an artist contributes to things like the meeples and whatnot, but the art is really fantastic in it, from everything from the player board to the cards to the box. The box is even really neat. So there's so much the artistic portion of it. I think that really draws you in. And the soundtrack. Like, the soundtrack is huge.
Apparently the way to Sean's gaming heart is through a soundtrack.
You know, I maybe.
Maybe. Who knew?
All right, who's hitting in your two hole?
Oh, God, that sounds terrible.
I asked you who's hitting in your two hole and you disappeared.
I ran away. I was like, no, really? I'm not doing that. No, I didn't. I said, oh my God, that sounds terrible.
This is also going at the
end. Is that really a baseball term? Yeah, hitting your two hole?
Yeah, hitting in the two hole. That's the second batter.
Does everyone snicker when they say that? Or
maybe at first. Now it's just like, I think it's an accepted baseball term.
Okay. Well, you learn something new every day.
I think we need to keep this in the show.
Keep going.
We need to educate people on this.
Oh, dear. Okay, my two-hole is Bunny Kingdom.
Oh, yeah.
And now I just see two little ears.
Yeah.
So you said you guessed that this would have been my number one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if I could go back, this might be my number one Gen Con, anticipated Gen Con release.
Mm.
Because it's card drafting, which I love. It's like point combos, which I love. Area control, not so much, but that doesn't matter because it's drafting and point combos. And the bits are amazing. Yeah, there's just all these like little bunnies in four different player colors, one of which is pink, so there's that. And then little castles and little buildings and little tiles that you put on the castles. Yeah, it looks really fun. The art looks really great. It just seems like a game I'll just really like, but just have fun with it.
Mm-hmm.
The hesitations I have, I've heard the board is very, very busy.
Yeah.
Like, too busy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that would frustrate me too much that it would just take away. Or what was the other thing? Oh, yeah, math. Just like a lot of math. When I listened to the Miami Dice review. Mm-hmm. And it was like Tom was, I think he was a math teacher, and he had to like help them figure it out. Like, because you're doing area control. So I think just for scoring, like, you kind of have to know. Because the board is so busy, then it makes it harder to know. So I'm like, but there's bunnies, and there's pink bunnies, and there's drafting, and there's so many things that do sound quite good. So I have pre-ordered it, and
I was going to ask you, this is definitely a try before I buy for me, even though I watched a little bit of it at Gen Con. I didn't get the chance. The lineup was a bit too busy for me to actually try it out. But yeah, as long as you pre-order, it should be coming out very soon, actually. So
yeah, it should be. Did it look as busy as
yeah
it did?
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah,
ah. yeah.
Very busy.
That's too bad. I wonder if they're just like, bits are selling. Let's just do a bunch of bits. Well, and they just like ignored common sense or...
I think you have to play it to actually determine that first. Like, it might... I mean, it doesn't matter if it's busy as long as it makes sense, I guess.
As long as you can read it, yeah.
Yeah.
But I know, like, Papa Paolo came out, and that's apparently a decent game, but people just can't get over the poor graphic design. Because it's too busy, you can't tell. Yeah. You just can't tell, right? So, hopefully that's not the case with this one, because Pink Bunny.
Pink Bunnies. Pink Bunnies for the win.
Yep.
All right, so my tool, or the last one I'm gonna talk about is Stuff Fables from Plaid Hat Games, designed by Jerry Hawthorne, and this was probably the coolest thing that I saw at Gen Con, and definitely my number one thing I'm looking forward to going away from Gen Con. And what this is, I've heard some people call it a spiritual successor from Mice and Mystics. I don't know if that's the case. I don't know. Maybe it's because it's the same designer. But what it is, it's an adventure game where you have a storybook, and each page of the storybook is the game board.
Similar to Near and Far?
Yes, exactly. So each one is your map with squares on it. And basically the way it goes is from and it was Jerry who kind of taught her demo, was that you have this, it starts off, she's 2 years old. It's a 2-year-old child. And the book progresses until she's 10 years old.
Mm.
And she is, basically what's happening is they're the quote unquote, the bad guys. And they're her stuffies that are protecting her. So like the demo we played, there were these really creepy looking... Have you seen Toy Story?
Yes.
You know those toys with the spire legs that the kid makes?
No, I don't have that good of a memory.
Those really creepy... Anyway, that's what these look like. And they're like under the bed, and they're coming out from under the bed, and you're all playing the stuffies, and you're trying to protect her from it. And there's a whole narrative. The guy who was giving the demo... he read the narrative and read what happened and, you know, really, went into detail about the story. And the way they describe it too, is that it's kind of like a choose your own adventure in that each mission has multiple different possible endings. And she grows up and she progresses as a character too, through until she's 10. So they were saying, you know, you really feel and you grow with her as you go through the game. And that's just, like, that really just jumps out at me as such an innovative, cool way. And it's definitely seemed like more of a game than a role-playing game, but very much, I guess, like, you know, Above and Below and Near and Far, those types of games where you have that strong narrative with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really, yeah, really looking forward to it. And just the aspect, the fact that you grow with her and you go through these important periods in her life. Like, I wanted to look through the book just to kind of see, and they were like, no, you can't do that. But you kind of go through as she grows up and she builds relationships and she, you know, develops bonds with her family and things like that. So it's just so, yeah, it's just that, like, whole, they say on BGG, I'm seeing now, it says, it's for groups of adults who haven't forgotten their childlike sense of wonder. And that's really what, when I was playing the game, having not read this, obviously, that jumped out to me. About.
Yeah.
So I'm like absolutely just on edge for it.
Yeah, this is one of those ones that just kind of passed by, but it looks so good.
Yeah, and obviously it looks amazing.
The minis are so cute.
Yeah, totally.
Oh my gosh, there's this little elephant, and he's just the cutest little thing. Wow, that's awesome. This sounds interesting. Yeah. I liked Mice and Mystics. Rich and I did play quite a bit of it, and then we just stopped, and then I ended up selling it. For me, it felt very, very fiddly. It just didn't feel streamlined enough. So hopefully this one will be a little bit cleaner.
Yeah, so from the two missions that we played, it definitely did not feel fiddly whatsoever. It felt like you're doing your story and you're kind of going through the story, and obviously they probably present to you two of the simpler missions for the purposes of the demo, but it did not feel like that whatsoever.
Interesting.
And you are working together because all your kind of stuffies, what's really nice about too, especially if you want to do it with kids, but it's really pushing a sense of cooperation and working together with it, which is also really cool for me that I really liked.
So I know a lot of people play Mice and Mystics with their kids. Do you think, like, did they say this is something that could be played with kids as well?
I don't see. Like, on the BGG page, it says 7+. I don't see why you wouldn't. I never played Mice and Mystics. I got it and sold it a few months later because I just never got it to the table. Some of the stuff, I mean, I would be careful how young. Some of the stuff does seem a little bit dark.
Okay.
Again, those guys I was mentioning with the spider legs, they're creepy. Like, for a 5-year-old, that would be really creepy. Like, I would not do that with a 5-year-old. There's ones, you know, it's pretty common for kids to be scared of what's under the bed.
Mm-hmm.
The second mission that we played on the demo was about you were under the bed and these things are attacking you and they're there
under
the bed. So I think you would be careful, but there's no reason for a 7 or 8-year-old that I don't think you can play it. And it definitely, like, we were all adults and everyone seemed to totally enjoy it.
Very cute.
Yeah.
I thought this, when I saw this on your list, I thought this was the expansion for Fabled Fruit.
Fabled Stuffies.
I was wrong.
The Stuffies are going to make some smoothies. All right, what's your three-hitter? Yeah, we've been over this before.
Is that what it is? Three-hitter? No, I want to know what it is.
Cleanup? I don't know. No, cleanup is 4. Whatever, just we'll figure it out. What's your next game?
No, you'll figure it out. I don't care. Okay, my next game is just a little one. It's called Imagine. It's by Game Right, and I will quickly look up the designer here. So this one's been out, actually, since 2015, but I haven't been able to get it in Canada. It's only been available in the States, and even when I've gone to the States, I couldn't find it. So it's by... Oh, dear. Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
Shingo Fujita, Shotara Nakashima, Motoyuki Oki, and Hiromi Oikawa. Okay.
Okay, good. That didn't sound bad, actually.
Whew. All right. So this game is just a really simple party game a la Concept, if you've played Concept before.
Yeah. That's one of my top 10 games.
Me as well. So this is 61 transparent cards. And very similar to Concept, there'll be, like, a house, an umbrella, a dollar sign, a man, an explosion, a fire, something like that. And then what you do is you get a word or a phrase, and you have to combine these cards in order to get people to guess what your word or your phrase is. And the cool thing is, because they're transparent, you can use them in different ways, right? So combine things together to show different actions. So, for example, there's one of a guy falling down. He's got his arms up. And then there's one with a line. And what I've seen is someone puts the line sideways and the man on top. And now it looks like he's swimming. So really creative use of images. And again, I really like Concept. It's been a huge hit with the family. So I just thought that this one would be, you know, a little bit smaller box and just kind of a nice variant when I'm not in the mood to play Concept. And yeah, I've been like, it came out in 2015. I've had my eyes on it since. I couldn't justify the price to bring it into Canada, and lo and behold, it became available on Board Game Bliss, so I got myself a copy. Yeah.
Oh, did you buy yourself a copy?
I did. Oh, as soon as, because I've been eyeing it for a while, so I'm really looking forward to playing it.
Nice.
Yeah,
I definitely want to play that when you get it. I remember seeing it a while back and looking into it if I could find it, and then just kind of forgot about it.
I've not forgotten about it. And I haven't heard, like...
Just forget.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything. Like, when it came out, there wasn't this big splash. Like, the people who talked about it were like, yep, it's nice. I haven't seen anyone play it, heard of anyone playing it, but I've always just wanted a copy. So, very excited. Nice. Yeah.
Sweet. Well, I think that's probably the episode, hey?
I think so.
It's episode five. So probably should have said this earlier. Maybe I'll put it in. Maybe I won't. We are moving to a Monday schedule, so we will be posting the episodes every second Monday. That is largely my fault because I am back to the real world now and back to work. So I don't have all week to edit. I need to do my editing on the weekends.
Life, hey? It always life gets in the way.
And I just really want to also thank a listener of ours, Patrick Hillier, for, aside from being a great dude who was very helpful to me in the time of need at JetCon, but also providing us with some resources to help try and get the sound a little bit more up to par.
Yes, thank you.
Yes, we're definitely going to try and get this one sounding a little bit better, because was it the last episode or the episode before? The sound was like, we tried really hard to fix it and just couldn't do it. So we'll definitely have this one sounding all right and proper.
Yes, hopefully. That's all you.
That's, yeah, hey.
I just look good.
You know, sound good. You know. Like, I haven't insulted you yet this episode.
Pardon me?
I haven't really insulted you this episode.
It's true.
So, you know,
it's true. So. I was finally starting to feel good about myself, and it just didn't feel right, Sean. It just didn't feel right. Yeah.
I have to be able to sleep tonight, so.
That's right.
All right. So, remember our anniversary edition? So if anyone wants to try and get Manhattan Project Energy Empire to the table, we'll have a little discussion about that next time to celebrate our iron anniversary. And we'll have a bunch of bits for you guys again. We really hope you enjoyed all of our bits. You think they enjoyed all of our bits, Michelle?
All the bits. Every the bits. Single one.
All right, so until next time, feel free to tweet us at
allthebitspod
or email us at
allthebitspodcast@gmail.com.
And join us in 2 weeks for the next episode of our fake radio show, All the Bits.
All the Bits.
I'm Sean.
I'm interrupting Michelle.
Yeah, see you guys next time.
Bye.